British Empire and Colonial Museum, 16th March 2001. This is an interview with Mr. H. Khan in Bristol, made with Brian Simons. Mr. Khan, can we start off by asking you to put on record your full name?
Yes.
And tell me when and where you were born.
My full name is Harry Albert Khan, and I was born in Clapham in
1916. And what sort of family background were, did you, was your family an overseas family, as it were?
No, there was no connection with overseas at all.
So what encouraged you to...
I was called up at the outbreak of war.
Yeah.
And I was called up into the Coast Defence Gunners. And after about 3 months training, was posted to Gibraltar. That was the beginning of my overseas.
But did you have any particular training before you joined up in civil life?
No.
So
no, I was very keen on radio,
yeah.
And I had applied to the Admiralty to be put on one of their lists, but I didn't hear anything about that.
Probably make you a lorry driver if you say that.
Actually, an interesting thing is, I was in the India office,
yeah.
And the military secretary, who was a full general, had a PA, who was a retired colonel, and I used to chat to him, and one day he called me and he said, when are you going to be called up? So I said, well, fairly shortly. And I said, I've tried to get into the signals, but all they want are linesmen. And I said, I'm interested in radio. Oh, he said, sit down a minute. And he gave me a viva voce in the Morse code. And then said, I'll write to the War Office. So shortly after that, he gave me a letter from somebody in the Adjutant General's branch in the War Office, saying, oh yes, this is the bloke for the signals. When he's called up, he can show this to the interviewing officer and he'll get into the signals. I was duly called up, was interviewed by a retired colonel, and during the course of the interview, he said, oh, there's no question about it, you go into the signals. So I said, well, I've got this letter. Oh, he said, that's right, you're going to the signals. So he said, of course, I have to put down the second choice. He said, I'll put down an artillery because they've got a big signal section. Thanks very much. Went home. Two or three weeks later, I was posted to the Coast Defence Artillery, which of course had no signals in it at all.
Well, he hears this sort of story so many times. Because came back saying you were in the India office before,
yes.
You were called up. That was just fairly junior clerical.
Oh, yes. I was in the military department,
yeah.
So I knew a lot about the Indian Army, because I was dealing with Indian Army officers when they came home on leave.
Yes.
The British soldier I was originally, who came home on furlough every 6 months,
yeah.
Every 6 years on 6 months furlough. So I had a good background of the position of the Secretary of State, for instance,
yeah.
And all.
It wasn't a question of you joining the Indian Army.
No, of course, and it wasn't until I was out in Jib, and I heard about this, and so I made some noises, and was recommended for a cadetship. What happened, I think, was that by about 1940, the government of India had run out of indigenous officer material available in India, and they came to this arrangement, presumably the War Office, that people, cadets, could be sent out from the UK to do their OTS training in India, and then get commissioned into the Indian Army, not the British,
yeah.
Army, the Indian Army.
Yeah.
And I was actually in the first batch that we were mobilised in Aldershot. But of course, the amusing thing was that I was out in Gibraltar, and I got called up from the... I was on the Moles, and I was called up to see the adjutant, and he said, all we could do is to fill in the paperwork. And he said, eventually, what branch of the service you want to go into? So I said, well, I know all about small calibre guns. I was on twin six-pounders. I know a lot about radio. I can drive. It's the Indian Armoured Corps. Right, down goes the Indian Armoured Corps. And the story behind that is that when I got out to India,
yes,
and was in the as a cadet in Bangalore OTS, one night we were having dinner in the mess, and a second lieutenant of one of the cavalry regiments came in. I don't know what he was doing there, but he came in to have a meal. So I took the opportunity to have a chat with him afterwards, and I said, I'm going into the Armoured Corps. So he said, have you got a private income? A private income? No. Oh, he said, you won't be able to exist without a private income. He said, you'll have to get full regimentals. You'll be expected to have a pony and a size. And so I said, crikey. He said, we've lost our horses, you see, anyway. Well, I said, well, you've got tanks. He said, tanks? We're motorized infantry at the moment. So, oh, crikey, what do I do now, you see? Fortunately, a few days later, somebody came in and said, the Royal Indian Army Service Corps are screaming out for officers. Any of you blokes would like to transfer? I said, please.
But before that, I mean, you'd had some time in Gibraltar, haven't you?
Oh, yes. I've got a whole lot of stuff about Gibraltar.
Let's go back to that before you got to India. I mean, you joined up and you did your training in England.
Yep. I was trained at the Citadel, the end of the 8th Fort at Plymouth,
yes, really.
On 6-inch.
Yes.
Where we, of course, that fires a 100-pound shell, and we had quite a few hernias. You try and lift a 100-pound shell.
Yes, yeah. Yes, I don't suppose anybody lifts that sort of thing now.
No.
But you... And then you were sort of posted to Gibraltar, it wasn't a question.
Well, we were expected at the end of our training to have 7 days leave before we were posted to a unit. But one afternoon we were fell in and they said, you're on overseas draft, you leave tomorrow morning. And we were injected, issued with some 14, 18 webbing equipment, those with a machine all over your chest, haversacks. And of course, during the evening, everybody was collapsing from the effects of the injections. We fell in the next morning, and with all our kit, there was about 30 or 40 of us, no NCOs, all just 30 or 40 recruits, 3 months service, put on a train, sent off to Woolwich. Fortunately, I knew we were around London, and when we got to Waterloo, some of the fellows couldn't even carry their kit, so I managed to get one of those huge porters, trolley things, and we loaded all the kit onto that, and then of course I took them up onto the higher level station so we could get to Woolwich. Got to Woolwich and we said, what about this leave? They said, oh, well, they'll deal with that down at Southampton, you're off there tomorrow. Fortunately I lived in London, so with the help of another fellow we managed to get home for a few hours that night. And the next morning we duly paraded, got on the train and went down to Southampton and were put on the Windsor Castle, which was a brand new boat which had just come off its normal weekly run from Cape Town.
I came back on the Windsor Castle.
Did you?
From East Africa, yes.
Did you?
Yes.
Well, it was obviously commandeered as it came in. And to our surprise, we'd heard all about the terrible stories about troop ships, but there we were, four to a cabin with en suite and mattresses and all the rest of it, a restaurant with pre-war food and meals and so on. And we had on board a battalion of the Black Watch and a searchlight regiment plus other things. And I also remember they said they couldn't tell us where we were going to for security reasons, but on the quay were some large wooden crates clearly marked Gibraltar, you see, so we assumed that was our destination. And we set off the next day probably, unescorted. And as we were crossing the Bay of Biscay, we were machine gunned by some...
Well, you went straight down, you didn't go out and sort of...
No, we went, we must have gone straight across because these planes could reach us anyway.
Yes, because and a comparatively fast vessel in those days.
Yes, anyway, we were unescorted, which was strange. Anyway, after the attack, we were told to come up on deck and we were given buckets of water and some implements, and we were told to go around looking for holes in the woodwork and dig out bullets, which were supposed to be incendiary, you see, and if we found one, to drop it smartly in the bucket of water. But we duly arrived in Gibraltar, and as we entered the harbour, to our utter amazement, we were greeted by all the battleships and things were lined with the crews. They were giving us, they were cheering like mad, greeted by a band on the quayside. And of course, we were told afterwards this reception was due to the fact we were the first reinforcements to reach the Rock since the outbreak of war.
And when was that?
That was about July 1940. So we poor 30 or 40 recruits were marched down to the southern part of the Rock, Europa Point, and installed in typical colonial barracks, huge white affairs with thick walls and high ceilings and painted white, where we found that we had iron bedsteads with rivets sticking out. And the battery quartermaster sergeant only issued us with one blanket, because when we arrived, he said nobody had told us we were coming. We had a horrible feeling we might have been sent out there by mistake. But anyway, we had our one blanket, tried on the on these metal bedsteads, found it was uncomfortable, decided to sleep on the floor. But of course, within a few minutes, we were attacked by hordes of bedbugs, so we got back onto the iron bed. But that night, we were woken up by loud noises, and the Italians were bombing us.
Straight away.
And I can still remember looking out of the window, and there was a full moon, and there was this enormous white barrack room standing out, and I thought, well, they can't possibly miss us.
Yeah.
But they did. I mean, they dropped some bombs down the road, and as far as I know, it didn't cause much damage. But for 10 days, we were on fatigues, and then they sorted us out. By that time, I'd been given a stripe, and I was posted to North Mole on these twin six-pounders. I think it might be an idea to describe the harbour.
Yeah.
Now, the harbour is Gibraltar Harbour is a long, narrow affair, and right at the south end of the docks. And then you've got South Mole, then Detached Mole, and then North Mole. And then at the northernmost end are the destroyer pens and submarine pens. I was posted to North Mole, and on each mole there was two twin 6-pounders at each end. So there was our battery was the 26th battery of the 3rd Coast Defence Regiment, six guns. Which I thought they were quite modern guns. They were for anti-MTB. Designed for that.
Yes.
And to describe the gun, it had the two barrels side by side, the two loaders faced each other, and as you loaded your round, you flipped the round into the barrel, that released two pawls which allowed the rectangular breech block to arrive and block off the breech.
Yeah.
The firing was a perpendicular little handle which you fired with your left hand. So you loaded, fired, the gun recoiled. As it recoiled, it lowered the breech block ready for loading. And it was a most efficient arrangement, and we were told that in action we were expected to get away 30 rounds a minute.
Really?
Which, with two barrels, was 60 rounds a minute. And as I'm a tracer, the layers should be able to operate what they call hosepipe laying. Because there would always be two or three rounds in the air at the same time, and therefore they just guided the thing round until it hit the target. It sounded most efficient. Of course, we never used the thing in action, so we never really be able to prove the point.
This was primarily anti-aircraft.
No, this was anti-motor torpedo boat.
Anti-motor.
Oh no, they were. They weren't ACAC.
They weren't.
No, they were to stave off attacks by motor torpedo boats. You see, Now I think probably a good idea to describe the armaments of the Rock.
Yeah.
As I say, we were part of the 3rd Coast Effect Regiment, which included 9.2s. Now they were the big boys. And everything was facing, of course, towards North Africa.
Yes,
the
yes.
Same problem as Singapore.
Yes.
Nothing was facing Spain. And the 9.2s were huge things. I never operated anything, got anywhere near them, but I understood that they fired something like a 350-pound shell, which obviously required cranes and slings and things, so their rate of fire would be quite slow. Then there was a battery of 6-inch, and the 6-inch I knew, of course, well, and they fired 100-pound shells. And when we arrived in Plymouth originally, the PT man, sergeant, called us in and said, "Stand round, boys," and there was a shell standing on the ground, and he said, "You pick that up." And of course he came over and sort of looked at it. There were no handles on it or anything, so he said, "Get back," and he just knocked it over onto one arm, put his fist underneath him, and it was on your shoulder, you see. And he said, "Time I finish with you fellows, you'll be doing that 6 times to the minute." And I think the PT was designed to strengthen our stomach muscles.